Morning. What a way to start out a bright and early morning to talking about deployment. So in this session, we want to focus on deploying Windows 8.1, talking about what's new. Hopefully, you've all been keeping track of the progress with Windows 8. How many of you are running the preview currently? A fair number. With the preview release, we tried to get most of the functionality out so that you could see that. We've also released, as part of the preview, all the deployment tools. We'll talk about what those tools are and how they've changed. You've probably seen the announcements. We've talked about general availability of Windows 8.1 coming on October 17th. We've talked about the fact that Windows 8.1 basically is a free update to the existing Windows 8 installs. We want to make it as easy as possible to go from 8 to 8.1, so we'll take a look at that. As far as the functionality goes in Windows 8.1, let's do a quick run-through of one particular part of it, just to make sure that you see some of the changes that we made around the Start menu, and then we'll dive more into the functionality. So if you look at a Windows 8.1 system, the start screen has a few new options with different tile sizes, but what most IT people care more about is the desktop. If you're going to be using Windows 8.1 on existing desktop machines and laptop machines, the non-touch enabled systems that you have today, which is definitely something that we want to encourage, you want to be able to give your users a reasonable behavior, something that they're more used to, which is why we put the Start button back into Windows 8.1 to get to the Start screen more easily. But that's only really the start of the changes. We've exposed some additional changes to really provide you some policy-driven options. So if we right-click on the bar at the bottom and choose Properties, we can see some new navigation choices. The first one is to go to the desktop instead of the Start menu when I sign in. So if I check that box, now instead of going directly to the Start screen, it will go to the desktop. That's one nice behavior. There's another behavior here, which is actually disabled on this system because I was playing with group policies, but there's an option to show my desktop background on the Start screen. If you set that policy, then when you navigate from the Start screen to the desktop, the same background will persist, which makes the transition between the two much more smooth. You also have an option to go directly to the apps view when you go to Start. So instead of seeing the normal Start screen, which is where the user can pin additional applications, you would see the apps view. So let me show you what I mean there. Let me apply those changes. Now when I click on the Start button, we get to this view, which is going to show you much more information because it's showing you all of the icons that are available, all of the apps that are installed. Sorting on this by default is by name, but you can change this to something like by category, which shows you the folders that would have been created for your app by your app installers. We could also look at it by date installed, or also the most used applications. So we have some additional options there. In addition to being able to go by category, we can go to the desktop, and there's another option here. To list desktop apps first in the apps view when it's sorted by category. So in this case, I now get to the app screen, and I see all of my desktop applications front and center. All of the new modern applications are then off to the right. So this is really designed for those systems that are going to spend much more time on the desktop, in the desktop environment, and not necessarily so much time in the new modern applications. So we're hoping that really makes it easier for enterprises. We've also added group policies around controlling the Start screen layout, automatically pinning applications. So we've definitely added more capabilities for enterprises to hopefully make the Windows 8.1 experience easier for your users. We've also added an additional application that will be updated in the RTM release, really to teach your users how to use the Windows 8.1 user interface, this help and tips application. If you've looked at that in the preview release, There's not a whole lot to it. It just says coming soon, but in the RTM release that'll be available in October, we'll have full tutorials that walk users through how to do a variety of different things. There will also be tips and tricks that show up throughout the UI, really just trying to teach them how to use the new UI so that you don't need to spend as much time educating them. So hopefully we've eliminated some of the barriers. That would be one of them. Let's shift gears back to deployment and talk about some of the additional nuts and bolts. We want to go through a few different areas. We want to talk about operating system deployment, application deployment, infrastructure deployment, because really they're all kind of interrelated when we're talking about deployment. Let's start off with operating system deployment. Compatibility really becomes the main concern when you're looking at a new OS. Are my existing apps going to work? Is my existing hardware going to work? We have very strong compatibility on the hardware side. The requirements for Windows 8.1 haven't changed. So any system capable of running Windows 7, any system capable of running Windows 8, will also run Windows 8.1, with a few exceptions. There are some hardware requirements that were added in Windows 8. The hardware has to support some chipset and processor features, some instructions, NX, PAE, and SSE2 instruction sets that were added to hardware around the time of XP, SP2. There are still some very low-end and very old pieces of hardware that will be excluded by that, so there are some tools out there to help you identify systems that might not have this, but most enterprise-class systems purchased in the last 5 years should include that hardware support. Windows 8.1 adds another minor requirement. There are some new instruction requirements for the 64-bit version of Windows 8.1, where you could have some systems that are 64-bit capable, but can only run an x86 OS because of these new CPU requirements. The only processors that I've seen that don't meet those requirements are things like Pentium 4s. Pentium 4's 64-bit processors may not be able to run Windows 8.1 64-bit because of the CPU instruction requirements, but they'll run the x86 version without any issues. Apart from those rather obscure processor requirements, we would expect 99-point-something% of machines to be able to run Windows 8, Windows 8.1 without any issues. There's no changes to memory requirements, no changes to CPU, no changes to disk space. In fact, it's quite possible that after you install Windows 8.1, you're using less disk space than you were prior to installing Windows 8.1, because there have been a lot of optimizations really to clean up after the OS better and make sure that it doesn't continue to grow over time. We want to make sure that the footprint of the OS stays at the footprint of the OS without continuing to creep larger as more updates are installed. Drivers should be compatible. There is one exception to that. There are some updated display link drivers. So if you're using USB display link docks with your laptops, you'll have to update the drivers for that. But for the most part, any existing Windows 7 and Windows 8 drivers should continue to work fine with 8.1. As far as desktop applications go, apps that work on Windows 7 will work on Windows 8. Apps that work on Windows 8 will work on Windows 8.1. So desktop application compatibility is very good, which isn't terribly surprising because we haven't really changed that much on the desktop application side. The subsystems that run these desktop apps are pretty much the same between Windows 7, Windows 8, and Windows 8.1. As a result, for those of you coming from Windows 7, which hopefully is a lot of you, shouldn't be too much work or concerns to get to Windows 8.1. For those coming from Windows XP, yeah, there's still going to be some app compat challenges. Those challenges would exist regardless of whether you're going from XP to 7 or XP to 8.1. So you will have to do some additional testing and remediation with XP as your source, but for those of you already running Windows 7, shouldn't be a big deal. For those already running Windows 8 and running new modern apps, compatibility of those modern apps between 8 and 8.1 will also be very good. As the main reason that we can ensure that is that we have this online Windows Store. This Windows Store has over 100,000 applications in it. we can run all of those apps against a Windows 8.1 image to verify that they all work. We have all the necessary automation in place to test all of those applications to ensure that they are indeed compatible with the Windows 8.1 OS. So no big concerns around desktop application compatibility, no big concerns around Windows Store apps. All of those should just work. That gets us to Internet Explorer 11, which is built into Windows 8.1. IE 11 should have very good compatibility with IE 10, so for those of you who've already made it to IE 10, great, you should have things handled pretty well. For those coming from earlier versions of Internet Explorer, there can be some work involved with that to make sure that your websites and your web apps are able to support the new HTML5 implementations in IE 11. Fortunately, most of the work required for those apps is really to tell Internet Explorer what version of IE was this written for. Was it written for IE 10? Was it written for IE 9, 8, 7? So you can indicate just with some simple tags in the HTML that are being delivered back to Internet Explorer, this is the behavior that I expect. Here's the compatibility that I want you to use. So that should be most of the effort required for these applications, is to make sure they properly indicate to Internet Explorer, here's what I need to support. There have been some tweaks in the Internet Explorer 11 behaviors around user agent strings and also as far as the container that Internet Explorer runs in. There's a new enhanced security mode that will... It basically enables Internet Explorer, the desktop version, and the modern version to share information between them, like cookies. So the state can be passed between the two, because they're both now running inside of an app container. As a result, though, that means that add-ons will be flagged. Anytime you go to a page that tries to run an add-on or an ActiveX control, you'll get a message saying that this page isn't compatible with the enhanced protection mode in IE 11. As a result, you'll need to run those pages outside of that protected mode so that they can properly run those add-ons. Easy enough, you get used to the prompts, it's fairly easy to set that to say this site should automatically run outside of that mode. As far as the user agent string, some of the changes that have been made are really just to tell the back-end web servers that this browser is compatible with Gecko, which is the engine used by Google Chrome. So rather than saying we're using an Internet Explorer engine, we're saying we're using basically a Chrome engine. So we're saying, please deliver to us the same HTML5 that you would deliver to Chrome or other modern browsers. So as a result, we can avoid some of the legacy hooks and code that people have put into websites to send different web pages to Internet Explorer so that it would work with IE 8 or IE 7 or even IE 6. Instead, we can get them to send the same high quality, standards compliant HTML5 to IE 11 to make compatibility there better as well. Definitely something to try out. Test it out with the preview release, see how things are working there. There have been a variety of enhancements and bug fixes after the preview release that'll be in the RTM version to make that experience even better. When it comes to deploying Windows 8.1, you have some different mechanisms now that when we're talking about going from Windows 8 to Windows 8.1. How many of you are running Windows 8 today on at least your own systems? Pretty much the entire audience, that's great. How many of you are running it broadly within your enterprises? Still, a good number. So for those, you'll want to try to get to 8.1 quickly. We've announced as part of the life cycle for Windows 8.1 that 8.1 is treated kind of like a service pack from a servicing perspective. So when Windows 8.1 is released, there'll be a 24-month window where Windows 8 will continue to be supported, but after that period of time, only 8.1 will continue to be supported. So we want to make it easy to get from Windows 8 to Windows 8.1. In order to do that, we can deploy the update from 8 to 8.1 from the store. That's great for consumers. That's not great for enterprises. For enterprises, will provide another mechanism to do that, which you can push out via your own internal software distribution tool, whether that's something like Configuration Manager, which is what the picture is here, or whether that's some other third-party tool, doesn't really matter to us. All you have to keep in mind is that the mechanism for invoking this is just run a command line. Run setup.exe / auto colon upgrade, and it'll take your existing Windows 8 system and update it to Windows 8.1. So the Windows Store experience is only for consumers and will only show up for machines that are OEM or retail activated. The corporate experience would be to use your own software distribution tool. That is really designed for any volume license deployment. So let's say you have a copy of Windows 8 Pro, you have a copy of Windows 8 Enterprise, they've been activated using Mac or KMS. They try to go out to the Windows Store and install the update. It's not going to even offer it to them. It's going to detect that that installation has been volume activated, and as a result, block the update from the store. They'll never even see that it exists. The only way for them to get that update is for someone to push it out to them over the internal corporate network. If you do have machines that are OEM activated or retail activated, so you're not using KMS or Mac, there is a group policy that you can put in place to say block the update from the store for those users as well. Hopefully most of you are using volume activation and don't need to worry about that. But if you aren't, then you can set that policy to make sure that the store never offers that update to your users. So we basically have one single update engine. This is setup.exe. This is the normal upgrade engine that's part of the Windows media. It has two different user interfaces that sit on top of it. One comes through the Windows Store with an image that's actually downloaded and installed from the Windows Store. The second mechanism would be for enterprises, where we have a different user interface that's more of the traditional UI, the wizard-driven UI to initiate that process. By specifying a new switch, the auto colon upgrade switch that we talked about before, that just automates that user interface so that there are no questions asked at all. It just initiates the process. So what you would need to do is take these pieces, the setup.exe engine, the install.wim file, all the contents of the Windows 8.1 media, bundle those up into a software distribution package, push it out to run that command line. It takes all of the existing applications, all the existing user data, all the existing settings, and migrates them from Windows 8 to Windows 8.1. So, as simple as we can possibly get it, let me switch over to a Windows 8 machine here. And let's take a look at what that looks like. So I have a Windows 8 system. This Windows 8 system is managed by Configuration Manager 2012 R2. In this case, you can see that there are a couple of operating system deployment task sequences here, but I'm not going to use those. This isn't using task sequences. This is just software distribution. So I can click to find additional apps from the app catalog and actually do this via self-service. Whether this is the mechanism that you would want to use or not really becomes a question for how you want to push out 8.1, but you could just as easily use Config Manager to push this update out to existing machines. In the case of Microsoft internally, we're doing this on more of a pull model, so we make it available through the application catalog for users to select. They can come and click the install button. That initiates the installation process, and it will complete in somewhere between 15 minutes and maybe an hour, hour and a half, depending on the hardware. 15 minutes is probably the best performance that we've seen on something like this ThinkPad Carbon X1 machine that I'm running here. For machines with spinning hard drives, older hardware, obviously it's going to take longer. And because it is downloading a complete Windows 8.1 image to do this update, there can be a significant impact if you have slower networks as well. The process itself will just go through some initial compatibility checks to make sure that There's nothing getting in the way of this update process. And then it will do the install of the 8.1 image and migrate apps data and everything else into it. The process itself is fairly resilient, and there's been a lot of effort put into making it as fast as possible. As far as the resiliency goes, if there is anything that goes wrong along the way, whether the OS blue screens or someone powers off the system or it, who knows what problem it might run into, it will roll back to Windows 8 without any harm done until it gets to the point where the operating system has booted successfully and got to the point where a user can log in. It can always roll back to the original 8 installation. This will preserve all the drivers, preserve all the apps, preserve everything else, and migrate it into the new OS. So we'll let that run for a while. We can come back and check on that one later. As far as the setup for that goes, it's fairly straightforward. In Configuration Manager, I have created a package containing all of the Windows 8.1 source files and defined one program on that called Automated Update that runs a nice simple command line. setup.exe/auto:upgrade. So that's all that's really needed to push that out. One fairly large package that gets pushed out, and one command to initiate it. So that's our hope for customers coming from Windows 8, that you'll use this update process to easily get you from 8 to 8.1 without having to go through the traditional OS deployment process of using MDT or Config Manager, building your own image, getting the drivers, getting the apps, getting everything else ready. That's not to say you don't want to do that anyway, because you'll want to be able to deploy to new computers. You may have existing Windows 7 machines that you need to migrate to Windows 8.1. So there are still going to be reasons to set up that traditional operating system deployment process. Or for some users, you may say, well, I'm just going to go through the refresh anyway. I'm going to use the same process for my Windows 8 to 8.1 deployments as I use for Windows 7 to 8.1 or even XP to 8.1. So you do have that option, but we basically believe that the update process will be easier and faster for you to get from 8 to 8.1 with less work put in overall. For those coming from Windows 7 or from earlier operating systems, really the only choice is to go through that refresh process. That refresh process hasn't really changed that much. So if you're familiar with the process that you use to go from Windows XP to Windows 7, or from Windows 7 to Windows 8, the process to go from XP to 8.1 or Vista to 8.1 or 7 to 8.1 is going to be pretty much exactly the same. We're going to use USMT to capture the data and settings from the existing OS. We're going to remove that existing OS. We're going to apply a brand new image, inject drivers into it, reinstall applications, and then restore the data and settings back into that OS. It's a very well-established process that hasn't really drastically changed since Windows Vista. Very consistent. We've continued to make enhancements and tweaks to make it faster and more reliable, but the process itself really hasn't changed that much. The deployment tools that you would need to do that process have all been updated. So first, we have the assessment and deployment kit, which contains incremental updates to support Windows 8.1. It can currently be installed only on Server 2008 R2 or above, or Windows 7 or above if you're installing it on a client. There's still discussions going on about the possibility of still being able to install it on Server 2008. So that may still be a possibility, but for now, it only installs on Server 2008 R2 or above. We also have an updated version of the Microsoft Deployment Toolkit, MDT 2013. This new release fully supports deploying Windows 8.1 using the new ADK. Not really any significant changes in functionality other than supporting Windows 8.1 and the new ADK. It does drop support, though, for some older operating systems and older versions of Config Manager. So MDT 2013 will no longer support deploying Windows XP or deploying Windows Vista. It'll no longer support Config Manager 2007, it'll no longer support Config Manager 2012 SP1. It'll only support deploying Windows 7, Windows 8, Windows 8.1, and it'll only support Configuration Manager 2012 R2. So if you're using old, if you're still deploying older operating systems, or if you're still using an older version of Config Manager, you can continue to use MDT 2012 Update 1 as long as those older OSs are still supported. So the old version of MDT will still be supported. But you'll have to use the new version to deploy Windows 8.1 or to support Config Manager 2012 R2. Very easy upgrade to get from 2012 Update 1 to 2013. Basically install the new MSI, update your deployment share, and generate new boot images. Done, fairly straightforward. So we would encourage you to make that move as long as you're using the necessary Config Manager version and as long as you're deploying Windows 7 or above. Configuration Manager 2012 R2 has also been updated to support Windows 8.1 and the new ADK. Older versions of Config Manager will be able to manage Windows 8.1, but it won't be able to deploy Windows 8.1. The only version that will have OSD capabilities would be Config Manager 2012 R2. The preview version of that's out now. The RTM version will be out soon. That's really true with all of these. Unlike in the past when we had a 60 to 90 day delay before all of these tools were available for you to do your Windows new version deployments, we want to make sure that on October 17th, when we release the new operating system, we'll release all of these tools as well. So same day, we'll have MDT, ADK, and the new Configuration Manager ready for you to deploy Windows 8.1. When we look at the ADK, there are some new pieces included in it. And there aren't any real drastic changes, but there are a few that are worth calling out. One is Windows PE. There's a new version of that. It has a few minor changes as far as features go. It now supports up to 4 terabytes of RAM on x64 systems, not that you would ever care, mainly useful in cases where you wanted to test a machine that has that amount of RAM in it, so running a RAM testing tool from within Windows PE. It also supports, it removes support for profiling. If you've ever used the profiling capabilities on Windows PE 4, those have gone away with Windows PE 5. The reason they've gone away, well, none of you ever actually used them because they were fairly limited in what they could do. Basically, the idea was that you could boot a system and have Windows PE watch what files were used and then tell Windows PE, remove everything but those files. So you end up creating a PE image that's only useful for that one piece of hardware to run the exact executables that were run during that boot sequence. No one used it. That it had limited usefulness outside of OEMs, so that feature's been removed. There has been one enhancement around scratch space, though. With the new version of Windows PE, if you don't specify a scratch space size, it'll pick one for you based on the amount of RAM in the system. So if the system has more than a gigabyte of RAM or more, it will automatically pick a 512 meg scratch size. If the system has less than a gig of RAM, it'll pick a 32 meg scratch size. So that's the basic logic that it's using. The challenge with that is right now MDT and Config Manager explicitly set this size to 32 or something that you manually specify. So if the size is manually set like that, then this automatic algorithm doesn't apply. But if you do leave the size out altogether in your own custom boot images, Windows PE will pick a size for you. There's also a new version of USMT available. USMT 6.3 is built into the ADK for Windows 8.1. It adds support for Windows 8.1 and for Office 2013. It has one complication, though. It removes support for capturing state from Windows XP and Windows Vista. How many of you are looking at deploying directly from XP to Windows 8.1? A fair number. That obviously would cause a problem. So what we've talked with the engineering team about is how can we come up with a scenario where we can make this work? We know the new version of USMT it won't work because the engine that USMT is using doesn't include support for these older OSs. But what we can do is we can use the previous version of USMT, USMT 5, to capture state from XP and Vista, and then use the new version, 6.3, to restore it. So we'll be creating documentation to show you exactly how to do that using MDT, using Config Manager, or if you have your own custom deployment process, here are the commands and here's how you would need to do that. So it will be possible. It'll just require using one version of USMT to capture the user state and a different version to restore it so that you get support for the required OSs. There are also some minor changes to the Deployment Image Servicing and Management tool, also called DISM. These allow you to do things like export a compressed recovery image. There's a new export image option to do that. More importantly, there's a new option that allows you to clean up your existing OS. So let's say you have a Windows 8 OS, and you install an update to Windows 8, and it updates one of the components. Let's assume Internet Explorer. The component gets updated. So the original OS had version 1. The update installed version 2. Now you install another update. You now have Internet Explorer version 3 components in the OS. You can run on Windows 8 a command, dism /online/start component cleanup, and it would remove older versions of those components. So it would look at the OS and see there's a version 1, there's a version 2, there's a version 3. I don't need version 2. I'm going to remove it. But version 1 was considered the base, and it wouldn't remove the base version under any circumstance. So you would always have two versions of the components, which meant your OS would grow over time. With 8.1, there's a new reset base option. So when you say start component cleanup /reset base, now when it sees version 1, version 2, version 3, it will remove version 2, version 1, and mark version 3 as the new base. So that way, we can keep the operating system from growing over time. We can make sure that we have a very small OS. The downside of that is, once you've done that, there's no way to roll back that hotfix, because you can't roll back to the original version 1. It's not there anymore. So you have to look at that a little bit and decide, is that what I really want to do? Do I really want to move to that latest version and not be able to roll back? But if you run that command, it will create the smallest possible operating system image for you. So in the case of refresh, if we look at this using MDT, you really won't see a whole lot of changes. If you were to install the updated version, the preview version of MDT 2013, you wouldn't even see this. You would still see MDT 2012 Update 1. So I am running a later version than what was released with the preview. But the changes to the scripts, there might be 3 or 4 scripts that have been updated. There have been a variety of bug fixes, some very minor changes in the task sequences. So very easy update to deploy. The task sequences themselves to deploy Windows 8.1, no real changes from what you would have seen in the previous version. So the actual deployment then, not surprisingly, is going to look the same as well. So if I go to a Windows 7 client, I can select my Windows 8.1 OS and complete the deployment wizard. So I'll try to take defaults through all of this. And we'll kick off the deployment. So nothing that's really going to be that noticeable as far as functionality goes. The main changes are to support the new ADK, to support the new versions of the tools, and to fix bugs. So that would be the bulk of the changes in MDT 2013. Let's see if our update's completed on that other system. Getting close. Got a black screen at the moment, but it is still running through, so we'll come back and check on that in a little bit. There are some other changes going on behind the scenes with Windows 8 and Windows 8.1. So this is kind of a rehashing of that. The biggest changes with Windows 8 logo certified hardware is the use of UEFI. For anyone buying Windows 8 systems, Windows 8 logo certified systems, we would encourage you to use UEFI because there are going to be two big benefits for it. One is improved startup performance. We can go from completely powered off to operating system booted to logged in and functional in seconds. On my Carbon X1 machine, I can get from powered off to completely usable in under 20 seconds, no problem. It also improves security. So we can ensure that nothing has tampered with the operating system before the operating system can defend itself. So the secure boot capabilities built into UEFI allow the firmware to verify the executables that are being loaded, and then the operating system itself can launch some early malware detection capabilities before the complete OS is up and running. So very good from a security perspective to avoid rootkits. So we definitely would encourage you to leverage these UEFI capabilities for Windows 8 and Windows 8.1. For those of you who still have older systems, they probably include UEFI support. Systems built for Windows 7 and pretty much everything released in the last 2 to 2.5 years has been UEFI capable. But until the Windows 8 version, the UEFI 2.3.1 release, it really hasn't been worth the hassle to go through that. But now with Windows 8 and Windows 8.1, you really want to leverage UEFI to get these benefits. The biggest thing to watch out for with UEFI, apart from it impacting your deployment process and having a new partition structure and a new disk structure and all that kind of stuff, is that it doesn't support cross-platform booting of an OS. So let's say you have a Surface Pro. Surface Pro is a 64-bit Intel Core-based system. You cannot run an x86 operating system on that system at all. It's just not possible. Because it's UEFI Class 3, it only runs native UEFI, and native UEFI can only boot a 64-bit OS on a 64-bit system. It is possible on some systems, the UEFI Class 2 systems, to be able to boot a 32-bit OS using emulation, using a compatibility module. So a lot of you are probably already doing that with Windows 7. You can have a 64-bit laptop with UEFI running in compatibility mode, so it emulates a legacy BIOS, and then boot a 32-bit OS in that way. So that's possible. That is a workaround for these Class 2 systems. But you will see over time more and more systems moving to the Class 3 native UEFI only, and as a result, they won't be able to boot 32-bit OSs on 64-bit hardware. Tablets also can present some additional challenges, primarily because of the devices themselves. A lot of them only have wireless networking. A lot of them don't include a keyboard or mouse. So how are you going to do simple deployment operations? If your deployment operation involves Pixie booting the computer, typing in a username and password, and then selecting a task sequence, that's not going to work so well. You can't Pixie over wireless, so you need a wired network adapter. Okay, you can attach a USB NIC to most of these machines. That's not a big deal. How do you type in a username and password in Windows PE? There's no on-screen keyboard support in Windows PE, so you have to attach a keyboard so you can type in a username and password. There is touch support in Windows PE, so you can at least select the task sequence and click on next by touching the screen like it's using a mouse, but you probably will want to keep around the USB NICs, the USB keyboards, port replicators, docking stations, et cetera, whatever it takes to give you that necessary toolkit to deploy Windows 8 or Windows 8.1 to a tablet-based device. It's also really important to make sure you get the right drivers. There's a connected standby capability that's present with the Intel Atom-based systems today. It'll also be possible with the Haswell-based Intel Core systems that'll be coming out soon. This connected standby mode, now called Instant Go or Instant On, I forget what the actual term is, but the new version will basically kind of work like your cell phone. When it goes to sleep, things still happen in the background. Networking is still active. It still can be running applications. It can pop up notifications. It can set off alarms. It can receive email messages. So things continue to run in the background, waking up as activity is detected. In order for that to work and to work effectively, you had to make sure that the battery life doesn't drain too quickly. In order to do that, you need to have the proper drivers for these particular systems. So the drivers that are being used on these tablet devices is very important, especially when you want to get the best battery life out of them. Windows To Go is another key capability added in Windows 8. It's been enhanced some in Windows 8.1 now because the Windows Store is not disabled by default. There was a challenge in Windows 8 that if you created a Windows To Go USB stick and moved it from computer to computer, it consumed licenses for the app. And after you had consumed the 5 license limit, the app wouldn't run on any subsequent hardware. It would tell you you had to remove it from one of the previous 5 machines. As a result, the Windows Store was turned off in Windows 8 on Windows To Go. With Windows 8.1, it's been turned back on because now Windows To Go is able to identify itself as a unique entity that's not dependent on the hardware changes as the USB key moves from device to device. So very easy to solve that particular problem with Windows 8.1, and really a great way to evaluate Windows 8.1 if nothing else. There's a whole bunch of scenarios that Windows To Go can enable, but at the very least we would encourage you to get one of these Windows To Go certified USB keys, which are USB 3 keys that report themselves as fixed disk and can be partitioned and all that good stuff. Use the wizard that's built into Windows 8 or Windows 8.1 Enterprise to lay an image of the operating system onto the USB key and then just boot it up. So it will boot from the USB key and run Windows from that USB key with all the same functionality as a locally installed version, except maybe it boots a little slower. Okay, now let's talk a little bit about apps. And when we're talking about apps, the main concern really isn't desktop applications. We've been dealing with desktop applications for decades. We know how those work. We know how those are deployed. What we're really concerned with is the new Windows Store apps. So we have to understand the capabilities and behaviors. And we really don't have enough time to go through this in great detail in this session, but I've got another session on Friday where we'll talk about nothing but Windows Store apps. Just as a quick summary though, Windows Store apps are a completely new set of APIs, completely new set of behaviors, completely new packaging mechanism, completely new installation and deployment mechanism. They all install per user. They don't require administrative rights. They generally would come from the Windows Store, although you can sideload them yourself from something like Configuration Manager or other tools. There are PowerShell commandlets to install and remove and update them. So there's just a completely new set of infrastructure here around these Windows Store apps that you need to familiarize yourself with as part of your Windows 8, Windows 8.1 education. You can provision apps, which is basically putting an app onto the machine, into the OS, so that it automatically installs for every user on the machine. Those can be included in a sysprepped image, but you can't install an app from the Windows Store and then sysprep the OS. The app would install per user, so it wouldn't do any good anyway because sysprep removes all the users. But there's no way to take an app in the store, say Skype, put it into Windows 8.1 and then sysprep it and capture it as an image so that anyone who gets that image now has Skype. Well, it's not a good example because Skype's now built into Windows 8.1, but imagine that was OneNote or some other application that you wanted to be able to get from the Windows Store and put into your image for all your users. There's just no way to do that. The customers would have to do one of two things. They would either have to contact the ISV and ask the ISV for the installation files so that they could push them out using Config Manager or Intune. If you ask Microsoft, we'll say no. Longer story, come to the session on Friday, we'll talk about that. Or you can just tell them that they'll have to go out to the Windows Store, log in with their Microsoft account, and install the app that way. Sideloading is basically the process of installing an app from somewhere other than the Windows Store. That's enabled by default on Windows 8 and Windows 8.1 Enterprise. It can be enabled with a separate sideload product key on Windows 8, Windows 8.1 Pro, or Windows RT. That product key is provided for free if you have software assurance for Windows. If you don't have software assurance for Windows, you can buy that in a 100-pack. I think it's about $30 per key in a 100-pack, so about $3,000 for 100 of them. If you have software assurance, though, nothing to worry about. If you have Windows 8 or 8.1 Enterprise, nothing to worry about. That's automatically taken care of. Now, in Windows 8.1, there have been some improvements in the application update process. So in Windows 8, any time an app that you acquired from the store or any of the inbox apps were updated, you would see a notification on the Windows Store icon that would tell you that some number of app updates were available. It would put a little number on the icon. And the process that you would need to go through is launch the store, click on a number of available updates, see the list, select them all, click the install button. That would happen 3 or 4 times a week as the apps that you have are updated. It gets really tedious to have to go through that time after time after time. So in Windows 8.1, that's been automated. Updates will now automatically download and automatically install. There are policies where you can turn that off if you want, but we would encourage you to leave that on because it's one less task the users have to worry about. When a new version of an app comes out, it automatically downloads and installs. There's also some more granularity in the group policies. There's a policy on the user that says disable the Windows Store. If you set that policy in Windows 8, there was no way then to install updates because you had to launch the store to get to the updates to click the install button. In Windows 8.1, you can disable the store for the user, and as long as automatic updates are still enabled, they'll still install. So you can disable the store for the user, enable auto updates, and make sure that all the apps that the user presently has, even if it's just the inbox applications, will continue to get the updated versions from the store. If you don't want the store at all, if you don't want updates at all, you can set a computer policy to say disable the Windows Store. And if the store sees that set, it assumes that means you don't want any updates at all, you don't ever want to talk to the Windows Store, and it will not do any of that automatic updating. So automatic installation is good. Installation of apps, installation of app updates when the Windows Store is disabled, that's good. And we've also fixed all the problems with proxy servers. So if you've tried Windows 8 with proxy servers, the store didn't work very well, various apps didn't work very well. We've addressed all of those challenges in 8.1. So we should be able to take care of all of those updating challenges with the new release. When we look at app deployment, we really have a fairly simple setup. So the main scenario that you would want to look at is, let's say I'm an enterprise and I want to build and deploy my own applications. To do that, I could use Configuration Manager. And in Configuration Manager, I can set up an application. That application can have a deployment type, which is an appx file. AppX file is the packaging format for these apps. So you can import that into Configuration Manager, and Configuration Manager knows that these Windows app packages, these AppX files, it knows how to install them. So all we really need to do is run through a wizard, point to the AppX file, and it will take care of the rest. So the entire contents of this package really is just the AppX file. Once I have that added as a deployment type, I can then deploy that to a group of users. Again, apps are installed per user, so with Configuration Manager 2012, we would want to target users with these applications. We can target them as mandatory applications to push them out to your existing users, or we can say that it's available to those users so that they can do it via self-service. Same basic idea on a Windows client. I can go to a Windows 8.1 machine. Get that app out of the way. Then with Configuration Manager, I can launch the Software Center, primarily because I don't want to type in the URL to the app catalog. Launch the app catalog from there and be presented with a list of applications. These could be desktop applications, these could be Windows Store apps. So we can use the same mechanism to push either of those out. In Configuration Manager 2012 SP1, this is a web page. In Configuration Manager 2012 R2, they'll release a modern application for this as well. So from here, we can find our modern app, we can click on install, and the application will install fairly quickly. So a lot of emphasis has been put on user self-service and user-driven scenarios, really to enable all of the functionality that we provide in Windows 8. So for those of you who haven't yet made the jump to Configuration Manager 2012, we would certainly encourage you to do this, especially because it's required to support all the advanced capabilities in Windows 8 and Windows 8.1. Config Manager 2007 only will provide basic manageability support for Windows 8 or Windows 8.1, so the newer versions are required really to get this type of application installation capability and also to get OS deployment capabilities. We'll let that one run for a little bit. Not sure why it's taking too long to evaluate requirements, but it'll be back shortly. Oh, and then of course when I click the button, it changes. Your application installation has started. So then it'll pop up a notification, it'll install in the background, and hopefully it will be ready to go here fairly shortly. So let's shift gears then and talk a little bit about infrastructure. For infrastructure deployment, we need to be concerned about, well, how does this new client operating system affect the rest of our infrastructure? It can do that from the perspective of management tools and from really Active Directory group policy and other things as well. We've already talked a few times that in order to get full support for Windows 8.1 and the new capabilities for OS deployment and the new app model, you need Configuration Manager 2012 R2. That'll be out at GA. You'll be able to manage it with previous releases. So using, say, Configuration Manager 2012 SP1, you would be able to manage it, and you would also be able to deploy the update using software distribution with that earlier version. So easy enough to push out Windows 8.1 to existing Windows 8 clients. There'll be a new version of MDOP released at Windows 8.1 GA. There'll be App V5.0 SP2 to support Windows 8.1. There'll be App V4.6 SP3 to support Windows 8.1. A new version of the UEV, User Experience Virtualization, will be released with Windows 8.1 to make sure that we can do things with Windows Store apps. So can we migrate settings? Can we roam settings for Windows Store applications between operating systems, between different installations? There'll be an updated version of Dart. That new version of Dart will support the new version of Windows PE in the ADK for Windows 8.1. So all of those will be updated in the MDOP 2013 R2 release. There's also a variety of new group policy settings. We've talked a little bit about the start screen control already. Basically, these start screen control policies allow you to mandate the layout of a start screen. So you can go into Windows, you can lay out the start screen the way you want, and then run a PowerShell commandlet that says export that to an XML file. You can then take that XML file and configure a group policy that says apply that XML file to these groups of users. Those groups of users then have a locked start screen that they can't change. The layout is mandated by that start screen control policy. There are additional policies that relate to those settings that we were looking at the beginning of the session. Anything that we could control there, as like boot to desktop or go to all apps instead of the start screen or show the desktop background by default, all of those are configurable via group policy and when set via group policy, the users can't change them. So you can mandate the way the start screen should behave. There are also group policies to automate the pinning of applications. So when apps install on Windows 8.1, they don't pin to the start screen by default. You can set a policy that changes that behavior just by specifying the app ID for that particular application. You can list all the app IDs that you want to automatically pin to the start screen. On the Windows Server side, there are some functions, some features in Windows 8.1 that do require updates to the server OS as well. There are some better together features like work folders. Work folders are basically the next generation of offline files. So today, if you have a file share and you want to make the contents of that file share available offline on your system, you can connect to that share, right-click, and say make available offline. This is kind of the successor to that. It uses HTTP, it allows synchronization over the internet, it's much more intelligent as far as bandwidth consumption goes, so it really takes over that capability and provides support for same types of features. So you have a back-end file server running Windows Server 2012 R2, you configure work folders. Clients can just type in their email address in the Windows 8.1 OS. It will know how to locate the work folder that it needs to connect to and automatically start that synchronization. That's true for workgroup machines, bring your own device, domain join machines, doesn't matter what the scenario is. We wanted to make sure that we could offer that same file synchronization capabilities for BYOD scenarios as you would see with domain join machines and offline files today. So that's new and it does require Server 2012 R2. There's also a new capability called Workplace Join. This is also tied into those BYOD scenarios. The idea here is that we can register a device into Active Directory, leveraging certificates basically. We can create an object for a BYOD device in Active Directory and then use that for dynamic access control. So we can limit access to files, websites, folders, whatever we want, by saying in the dynamic access control, I'll allow this user to access this resource, but only if they're coming from a trusted device. So going through the workplace join process enables you to trust the devices. That'll be supported with Windows 8.1. That'll even be supported with non-Windows operating systems. So you would have the server backend being able to validate any client OS machine that's coming forward and saying, I want to access this resource, and I've been trusted and already verified to Active Directory. There are also improvements to remote desktop. So you get better compression, better performance, better reconnect speeds in cases where the connection is dropped. They've re-added shadowing support, so as a help desk person, you can shadow a user who has an existing remote desktop session, be able to interact with that session with them. So definitely some improvements there. There are updates to volume activation. Not really any changes in functionality, but there will be new KMS and Mac keys. You'll need a new key to activate Windows 8.1 or Windows Server 2012 R2. There'll be hot fixes for KMS for down-level OSs, so if you wanted to install that new product key on an existing KMS server, you would need to install that hot fix first. That hot fix will be available at GA. It's not out there yet, but at GA, you'll be able to download that and install that. You could also move to Server 2012 R2 for your KMS server that already knows about the new keys. So you basically have a choice. You can run KMS on a new server, or you can apply a hotfix to an existing one and then install the key on top of that. Otherwise, there are no real changes. We still have Active Directory-based activation, which was a new capability added in Windows 8, where you don't use KMS at all. Instead, you create objects in Active Directory that the clients know to look for to activate themselves. That's supported on Windows 8, Windows 8.1, Server 2012, Server 2012 R2, and Office 2013. If you're running older OSs, or if you have workgroup join machines that wouldn't be able to find those objects in AD, then you would still need to keep KMS around for those. There are some schema updates. None of them are required, but you would want to consider them if you're going to leverage any of these new capabilities. So if you're looking at Workplace Join, if you're looking at a new authentication policy, which basically allows you to restrict what computers in a particular account can log into, or if you're looking at AD-based activation, there are some specific schema requirements for those that you would need to implement these new schema levels, or in the case of authentication policies, also the functional levels needed to be updated to support those capabilities. We've talked a little bit about the proxy issues. We have fixed that in Windows 8.1. That fix basically is kind of a top-to-bottom fix, where there were changes needed at multiple layers in the operating system to make that work, which is why it's required to get 8.1 out there to resolve those issues. There are changes at the lowest operating system layers, there are changes at the application layers, and then there are changes in the applications themselves in order to enable access through especially authenticating proxy servers. In Windows 8, the new modern applications didn't use the old WinSock style access to the internet, so they wouldn't pick up proxy settings from Internet Explorer like existing desktop applications typically would. So the 8.1 improvements really are to add equivalent capabilities into the new WinHTTP networking stack that can be leveraged by these new modern applications. So we'll take care of fixing it in the OS. We'll fix it in the app platform. We'll fix our own applications to make sure they work with authenticating proxies. But it is still possible that third parties will need to make some updates to their apps to add those same authenticating proxy capabilities. An app needs to be aware that if a proxy server comes back with a response that says authentication required, it needs to know, oh, I need to prompt for credentials in order to allow the user to access the internet. So those are the types of changes that may be required for those applications. Let's switch back over and see if our updates have made it through. So this was our app install. Let's see if we have a successful installation of this application yet. We can't see it on the start screen. That was one of the changes in behaviors in 8.1, is apps don't get pinned by default. So let's see if we do this by date installed. We can see our new Rounds app has been installed, and we can launch it successfully. So this is a side-loaded application. It was loaded through Configuration Manager, not using the Windows Store. We didn't have to do anything special for enabling side loading because this is Windows 8.1 Enterprise. That's taken care of for us. It's joined to Active Directory. There is a policy set to allow all trusted apps, and we've made sure that the certificates used to sign these applications are already trusted by Windows as well. So as a result, the app just works. If we go back to our client systems, our Windows 8 client machine is still working on getting to 8.1. This is a virtual machine, so it doesn't take just 15 minutes. It does take longer, so it's rebooted a couple of times already while we've been watching, but it will still take a little bit longer to go through. And then the Windows 7 system that we were refreshing to Windows 8.1 is kind of in that same state, that it will continue running as well, with the two of those kind of monopolizing the resources on that Hyper-V server. Okay, so that is pretty much what I wanted to go through. How many of you are planning to deploy Windows 8.1 fairly broadly in your enterprises? That's good to see. When the GA version comes out in October, we would certainly encourage you to all get started with it and start deploying. MDT, if you're using MDT today, easy upgrade. That release will be available at the same time. If you're using Configuration Manager, you'll want to look at the R2 release. It'll be a much easier deployment compared to, say, going from Config Manager 2007 to 2012. Upgrading from Config Manager 2012 SP1 to R2 will be just like a service pack. It's basically run setup, click next through the wizard, it upgrades your site server, push out a new client, MSI, to all of your existing Config Manager clients, and you're now set to go. You're fully prepared to support Windows 8.1 in those ways. So that's fairly easy. MDT is fairly easy. The new OS, hopefully you'll find good results for application compatibility and hardware compatibility. You'll want to put in a little bit of due diligence around Internet Explorer 11, since IE 11 is built into the OS. And that should be pretty much what it takes. If there are any questions about anything that we've covered, raise your hand and we'll take those now. Yeah, so the question was for the DISM start component cleanup, what does that do for different versions of the .NET framework? Will it clean up older versions of that? And it won't, because it really considers those completely separate components. You would have .NET 3.5.1, which is one set of components, and you would have .NET 4.5, which is another set of components, completely independent of one, so from one another. So if you cleaned it up, you would still have the latest components of .NET 3.5 and the latest components of .NET 4.5 existing on the machine. Okay, anything else? It's a shy crowd, but if there are any other questions, come up front. Oh, there's some questions back there. I just can't see that far. So the question was, how do modern apps work with Config Manager or WSUS? And today the answer is they don't. So today, updates to modern apps acquired from the Windows Store or inbox are coming through the Windows Update infrastructure, but not through WSUS. So today, the updates are basically all or nothing. It's not like you have any controls in place to say, I want this one but not that one. So no ties between them today on the client side and as far as WSUS goes. Definitely something that we're looking at for the future, but with the current versions, it's basically going to be, once the Windows Store is enabled, the updates will flow. For apps that you've pushed out yourself via sideloading, that is a different situation. In order to push out a new version of an app, you wouldn't be using WSUS or update functionality. You would just push out the new app version, and it would know that, oh, there's an older version of this app already installed. I'm pushing out a newer version. That means I need to upgrade it. So it handles that scenario just through standard Config Manager software distribution. Yeah, with Windows 8.1, the proxy capabilities are still keyed off of the proxy settings that you provide to Internet Explorer. So the idea would be that you set the proxy server via group policy or via an IEAK branding pack. That gets pushed out and installed in the operating system. The OS will actually notice that there's a proxy server specified or a pack file or something else specified in the IE registry keys, and copy those registry keys to where they're needed for the modern applications to find that. So it's all transparent from an IT pro perspective and from an application perspective, but there is some magic going on behind the scenes to shift those settings into the right places for the OS to find. Okay, there's a question over here. Workplace join, does it require a schema update? Yes, it does. It creates a new object type in Active Directory for the object, for the computer object that gets created. So you do need the schema update there, but you don't need any functional level updates. Just the schema update is sufficient. Okay, anything else? Okay. Well, please submit your evaluations. Find me after the session if you've got any more questions, and hopefully I'll see you on Friday to talk more about Windows Store apps. Thanks.